Common Science with Jeff Danner of the Common Science blog on our website, chapelboro.com. It updates every Sunday. He joins us every Monday to talk about it. And, Jeff, how was your weekend?
It was nice.
Yeah?
I'm trying to remember what happened. Usually, sometimes by Monday afternoon.
It's just a complete whirlwind every time, right?
Busy lives and kids and families. I think we had people over for dinner last night. That was fun.
That's good.
Friday, I went to the launch event for Orange County Living Wage.
Oh, yes. How was that? We're going to have Mark Markopoulos and Susan Romaine later on this week to talk
about
it.
Excellent. That was great. I was there in my capacity as a board of directors member of AWASA. Okay. AWASA was one of the participating employers, mm-hmm. and Ed Kerwin, our executive director, gave a talk. But it was really inspiring.
Yeah.
Just some great people, and they were telling their stories about what they needed to do and to get to the living wage level, and just hearing from some of the employees. It was reaffirming sort of an event.
Yeah.
So it was a great way to start the weekend.
I saw a lot of the pictures from it. It got a great turnout and a lot of people really excited about it. And it really just goes to show just how holistic all of these issues are, because we were just talking with Dolores Bailey mm-hmm. about affordable housing, and every time you talk about affordability, it always comes back to, well, you've got to focus on housing, you've got to focus on transportation, you've got to focus on wages too. And it's amazing how all of these different things affect each other. Which segues very nicely into our Common Science blog of this week.
Absolutely.
I'm really glad you mentioned the living wage thing.
All right, but before we proceed with the column, I think we need to put a warning out to listeners in case there's any sensitive ears out there. We will be discussing the reproductive habits of invertebrates here during this segment. So if you think that might be a little much...
When have we ever put a disclaimer before talking about the reproductive habits of invertebrates?
Well, we only do it a few times a month.
That's true. So. Four or five times a month, depending on the moon cycle.
Well.
All right. So we're talking about sunscreen and coral this week.
And so, people often ask me, Jeff, where do you get your ideas for columns? And they come from a number of different avenues. But it's not uncommon for a science story to... Someone covers it, and then people think it's interesting. It gets picked up on. You see it everywhere. And I hearken back a little bit to, we talked maybe a year or 2 years ago. You remember when solar roads were the big thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, geez, what are all these stories on solar roads? Which I, at the time, told you I thought was a really bad idea. And you may have noticed that you haven't seen any stories about that of late.
Solar roads, right.
Well, so the same thing happened, at least in where I get my news, which might not be the average person, but I read a lot of science news, and I just saw the headlines, sunscreen killing the coral. And I thought, well, okay, here's another one of these stories that's getting a little bit of momentum. Let me check that out. And I thought this one had the air of plausibility.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned in the beginning of the column, I thought, well, I know, coral, as we're talking a little about, depends on sunlight, like most life on Earth. And I thought, well, people put on their sunscreen to go into the water.
It washes off.
So perhaps there's enough sunscreen now that's accumulated in the ocean and that the sun's not reaching the coral, and that's having some sort of deleterious effect.
Yeah. And especially, additional sort of compounding that is the fact that big coral reefs tend to be tourist attractions.
Right.
So a lot of people go, they lather on sunscreen. Yeah.
So that turns out to be nothing to do with the alleged problem.
I
was misimpressed. So let's talk a little bit about coral.
Okay.
How it lives and reproduces, as I foreshadowed.
Yes.
And then how sunscreen is likely impacting it. So coral are... little invertebrates like clams and oysters are invertebrates, and they're invertebrates. They don't have a backbone, hence the term. And like clams and oysters, coral excrete a calcium carbonate exoskeleton. In the clam, that's the shell.
Right.
So, but what the coral do is they share them.
Okay.
Right? And so they share part of their exoskeleton with their neighbor, so that each of the little corals is excreting some calcium carbonate, and that builds up this big structure we call a coral reef.
Okay.
And inside of each one of those little nooks is one little coral.
Okay.
And
like a dorm then, basically.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
and then as I was researching how sunscreen might hurt coral, I was kind of reviewing the life cycle of coral. And here's where this was just really fascinating, at least to me. So okay. Hopefully it will be to the listeners as well.
We start talking about sunscreen and we start getting off on the reproductive habits of invertebrates.
Yes. Tangents are always a risk in this segment and in my columns. So coral reproduce in two ways. They can reproduce asexually. So an adult coral in its little nook in the coral reef will divide in two. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they decide, but which one of them gets kicked out.
Okay.
One of them leaves the little nook and moves to the side and excretes some more calcium carbonate and grows its own little cell.
Okay.
And that's the process by which an individual coral reef can grow. Mm-hmm. It's just getting bigger and bigger as the coral are dividing.
Right.
But much as that makes these beautiful structures you might see snorkeling, it's got a couple of disadvantages in an evolutionary sense. Because if you're just growing by asexual reproduction, everyone nearby are genetically the same.
The same,
and so they're going to have vulnerability to sort of the same things.
You need diversity.
So coral also reproduce sexually. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is at the appropriate time, and we'll talk about the timing because this is the really cool part, but at the appropriate one.
When I'm older.
Yeah, when you're older. When you're older. When you're a minute older.
When you're a minute older.
So one night during the month, all of the coral release their eggs and sperm into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're floating about, and then hopefully they run into each other, and you have fertilized eggs, and they'll land somewhere at a distance.
Okay.
And that will start a new coral reef in some other location.
Gotcha.
But what really struck me as being fascinating about that is in an area where there's coral reefs, even if there are many, many different types of species of coral, of which there are quite a few, all of them will release their sperm and eggs into the water on the same night on the cycle of the full moon.
Interesting.
And so you read that and you think, well, at least if you're me, and everyone's pausing for a moment to be happy that they're not. but if you're me, it strikes you, oh, okay, all of us, humans included, evolved from life in the sea, and here's this sexual reproductive cycle that's the same length as the lunar cycle, just like the human female.
True.
And, and I'm often struck by these sort of evolutionary echoes.
Idiosyncrasies, maybe?
I don't know. Echoes? To me, it's like an echo from long ago.
Sense. Yeah.
And, I've written about it in the past, and, these are some of my least read columns ever, but I like them. if you recall, years and years ago, I wrote something called Your Mother the Plant about the similarity between chlorophyll and hemoglobin, but I just thought this was
I think you could get a lot more hits if you called it, like, the eerie tale of the were-coral that comes out of the full moon.
Yes. When Common Science really picks things up, I'm going to hire a marketing agent.
And I release it on Halloween with
I just thought that was fascinating to think about. And as I mentioned in the column, I'm assuming that if you happen to be a sort of a evolution denier like Ben Carson, your life is a little emptier for not being able to appreciate these things.
That's true. Yes.
So that's coral.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry.
Let the record show that Jeff just did a random hat tip for no reason. I don't know why that is.
One other important thing about coral before we talk about how sunscreen might be hurting it is that coral, most coral, don't actually eat.
Okay.
What they do is they provide they're hosts to symbiotic algae that live on the shells and in amongst them, and those algae take in the sunshine,
right?
Go through photosynthesis, and they create sugars that provides energy for the algae to live. But they also let some of it diffuse out into the coral because they live in amongst and even within the coral's body in some sense.
Okay,
and so it's this symbiotic relationship: the coral get the sugar, and the algae get a place to live.
Communist freeloaders that all live in the same place don't work for their own living.
God love them. So, and in fact, if you look at a coral reef, I mean, that's why it looks sort of greenish-brown, generally speaking. That color comes from the algae, and if a coral reef is dead, or sometimes called bleached, all you see is the calcium carbonate of the exoskeleton. So it looks like sort of like a great big mangled clamshell, and that's why they look bleached.
Okay.
Okay.
So, sunscreen.
Sunscreen.
Always important.
Yes. So, a sunscreen there has most sunscreens for many, many years have had a chemical called benzophenone. That's the active ingredient that stops the UV rays. It's also referred to as oxybenzone because we scientists like
add
to have
syllables.
They have different names for the same thing.
Yeah.
And so I started to research, what is it that this oxybenzone or benzophenone is doing? And there are two theories. There's one theory that it gets into the algae and somehow stimulates a dormant virus within the algae, killing the algae.
Okay.
And then, algae.
The whole food cycle dies.
And then the other theory that is interesting is that there's also a theory that the benzophenone damages the DNA within the coral itself.
Okay.
So that's two very different modes of action. But the one thing that is absolutely clear is that, in test after test and study after study, it certainly does harm the coral. So in this sense, we don't necessarily have to, in my opinion, await a full understanding of the mechanism before we take some action.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I found a little bit disappointing was there's a really compelling article about this that was published in 2008 in National Geographic.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I can tell,
not a thing has been done
since that time. And coral are really important in that they attract other sea life by having those nooks and crannies for other small fish and crabs or sea life to live. It's sort of the bottom of the food chain. So a coral reef in under the ocean represents a tremendous, amount of biodiversity and just general population. And so when coral reefs suffer,
a lot of other life in
the ocean suffers. And estimates are about 10% of the coral reefs in the ocean today are already dead, and 60 or 70% are at risk.
Endangered,
From other, from things like warming temperatures, not good for coral reefs.
Right, and this is just compounding that.
As we've talked in the past, more carbon dioxide in the air makes the ocean waters more acidic. That's not good for coral. And so here we have this phenomenon with sunscreen that's also adding to the picture.
So trying to come up with a way to sort of motivate people to take action, is there a sunscreen out there that doesn't include that chemical?
There are many.
Okay. Because I can imagine, like, the Australian Tourism Board is probably not going to want this publicized all that much because people going to the Great Barrier Reef are going to be putting on sunscreen, and if they can't, then they won't.
Yeah, there are many, many other agents.
Okay.
There are a number of other chemicals with long names that I can't remember here that work just like the benzophenone does that could be used as a substitute and are used as a substitute. But then on top of that, one of the things I talk about in the column, sunscreens that have zinc oxide and titanium dioxide are really good. And these have a bad reputation because 20 years ago, if you got the zinc oxide one or the titanium dioxide one, those are the ones that would make like a big white, look like you put white paint on your face.
Gotcha.
And they're very effective. And the nice thing about the mineral ones, because zinc oxide and titanium oxide, that's basically just like it's rock dust of a particular type.
Yeah.
In the process of screening away the UV radiation, nothing happens to them. They're not damaged in the process. So as long as you don't wipe it off or sweat it off or have it come off while you're swimming, it'll keep acting.
Mm-hmm.
All of the other agents, benzophenone and other analogs, are each time they prevent a UV ray from hitting you, it sort of sacrifices itself.
Oh, interesting.
So, as you're talking about when to reapply sunscreen, that becomes less and less effective.
Gotcha.
As it's out there. And now, what I suggest in the column and to anyone who's listening is give another try to the sunscreens that have the titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. What manufacturers have learned to do is grind those particles much, much smaller.
So it doesn't look like
you're all pasty white.
Yeah.
And that makes the sunscreen more effective. I mean, you've just got, for the same loading of zinc oxide or titanium dioxide, by grinding it up into little particles, it creates more surface area. So it does a better job of shielding your skin from the sun. So,
okay.
And they're, in, again, since they're rock dust, they're environmentally benign. And so I think, that's the way we could go as consumers. But I think if you want to protect the coral, I mean, I think as is, and I'll mention that 2008 study from National Geographic, it didn't have an impact. But the reason you're seeing these stories is there's a more recent study published by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric
Association.
Administration,
that's right.
The people that do the hurricane forecasting. Yes. And they have a lot of gravitas out there. So they put a study, and that's why people are running, and hopefully things will happen.
Right.
And I think this is a situation, not unlike chlorofluorocarbons hurting the ozone layer, where, I think we should just sort of internationally say, look, this is damaging the world's oceans, which is the commons of humanity, just like the ozone layer, and we should say there's just no reason we need to keep doing this. We can make sunscreen from other things. Let's stop putting the benzophenone in there and save the coral and let them have their little festivals every full moon and continue to create more reefs and support sea life in the ocean, because there's a lot of us around here and we eat a lot of fish.
It's a bacchanalia once a month. All right, so the website is chapelboro.com. You can go there, get the Common Science blog, what is the actual title of it? Sunscreen, A New Threat to Coral is the title of the one this week. It's up there on the homepage right now. You can check it out. You can also check out my column about the 2015 election,
as
which is just below it. So get your reading in for the afternoon. What's up for next week?
I have yet to decide.
All right. We'll find out. Jeff Danner, Common Science. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.